Good morning. I'm Gabe Galloway. I represent Mr. Lipscomb in this case. I don't have a lot of time, so I want to go straight to the ineffective assistance argument I've raised because it's an unusual kind of thing to do.
Your entrapment argument baffled me. I don't get that.
I know, and we've discussed this before. Do you want to talk about that first, or do you want to talk about...
Do you want to just retract it, or what?
No, I don't want to retract it. I actually think that this case looks a lot like the classic entrapment cases, which were prohibition-era cases.
No, entrapment is where you induce someone to commit a crime that he wouldn't have committed if you hadn't given him the inducement. You give him $1 million to steal a bicycle. So he steals a bicycle, but he would never steal a bicycle in the ordinary... his ordinary life, because you never get $1 million for it. That's entrapment. Now, there isn't anything like that here.
Well, this defendant didn't have any criminal record. He doesn't have a history.
It had anything to do with it. The point is, he wasn't induced by the government, by something the government did, to become a, to engage in this criminal activity.
Well, at the hearing where they discussed this, he claims that he didn't want to do this, and he only did it after repeated entreaties and cajoling from the government's agent, the CI. So, I mean, that is what happens in the old prohibition cases. A CI comes to your doorstep, says, I've heard you have moonshine here, and the person at the door says, no, we don't, and I don't want to sell you anything. And they come back the next day and say, please, I love moonshine, I got to have it. And he says, no, and they come back the next day and they say,
but that assumes he's eventually been charged with the moonshine. And before I get to the main point that I wanted to raise, Mr. Lipscomb is not, when all is said and done, facing trial on these particular sales with the CI. He's only tried on the counts dealing with the crack that they found on his person and in his apartment. But I have to say, I mean, we say this all the time in these cases, and you may have been starting with this, it's awfully risky to go forward with an ineffective assistance of counsel argument on direct appeal since we have no idea what the lawyer was thinking about, and there are presumptions that lawyers have reasons for what they do, and the entrapment defense on the face of things looks quite weak anyway, so it's hard to see how you would find, at least without more of a record, how you would find deficient performance.
Well, Your Honor,
and
can I speak to that?
You know, without a 2255 record...
In this case is very unique in my experience because we actually do have the lawyer on record saying what he was thinking and why he didn't want to raise this. And what he said is the reason I didn't want to do an entrapment argument is because the money that the CI used, that's cataloged, was the same money my client had in his pocket, and that's the reason
that
I don't want to do this.
I know that the lawyer said that, but then the question, though, the broader question is you can't find ineffective assistance of counsel under the Strickland standards unless there's deficient performance. And even if the lawyer gives a bad reason for not raising a frivolous defense, if no one has lost anything. Maybe that's the prejudice side of things,
if you will.
But the fact is, without any more of a record, it's tough to see how you can get anywhere with this. Now, in some ways, you know, maybe it's more efficient for the system if we just shut this down right now, but you know that your client can't raise this point later on a 2255 if we resolve it now.
Right. Well, so, I just thought
Is it your view that the government induced him to go into the crack cocaine business? He wasn't in it. They induced him to go in, and then he bought this, you know, he bought his digital scale and his plastic bags and all that. And they had put him into the drug business? Is that the argument that you think the lawyer should have made?
No. I think
that's what entrapment means, doesn't it?
Well, maybe I shouldn't say no. I should say that it's his position in the record that he's never sold drugs for profit before this, and this is the first time he ever did.
He didn't sell them for profit. He did what? He sold them.
I guess he bought it for himself and gave it to his friends or something. I mean, there are people who do this. I mean, I've had plenty
that's
of cases.
That's still possession with intent to distribute. The government doesn't really care if you have a successful business.
Okay. I guess I don't really have much for you on that. But in the record he says, you know, I've never done this before. The CI begged me, and so eventually I relented. And the thing that really struck me, though, and I see my time's up, but I'll say very briefly that the thing that really struck me here is that the lawyer's reason for doing this was just plain wrong as a matter of law. And I wanted to answer you. I mean, you asked me that, and I've never seen this before. Someone says, if anything is below objective standard of reasonability, it is stating a legal error as a legal truth. I don't see how it could get any worse than that.
Yeah, I know, but there's no way in which making an entrapment argument is going to help his client. It's a ridiculous argument. The judge would never allow a jury to consider it.
Well, my time is up. Can I answer you? I mean, I don't know how much I have, but I mean, there is a second prong, which I never got a chance to get to here, which is the prejudice prong. And the way that Strickland lays it out is it says that you have to have a reasonable a reasonable expectancy that this could succeed. There's a reasonable probability that if counsel had performed adequately, the result would have been different. What's a reasonable probability? Is this enough?
I don't understand. The judge would not allow a jury to consider this entrapment argument because it's ridiculous.
Well,
you only send to the jury a defense which a reasonable jury could accept. If there's absolutely no basis for it, you don't send it to the jury.
Well, I think there is...
No, there's none. It's ridiculous. You'd have to be arguing that somehow this fellow, not in the drug business or anything, he's perfectly innocent, and the police come along and say, well, we want to buy drug from you. And he says, I'm not in the drug business. They say, well, go into the drug business. Go get your scale, get your knife, get the drugs so we can buy them from you.
Well,
so he goes in the drug business and sells them some stuff in January and early March, and then he's in the business. And then they...
Well, Your Honor,
it's ridiculous.
Let me say very briefly, again, this mirrors the prohibition cases. In the prohibition cases, the government didn't induce them to make a still. They didn't induce them to have moonshine at their house. They just induced them to sell it. And that's what happened here. But I'm way over my time. Thank you very much for hearing me.
Okay, thank you. So, Mr. Radcliffe?
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Tom Radcliffe. I represent the United States government in this case. I was trial counsel as well. I'm happy to answer any questions that the court may have about the procedural history, et cetera. I do want to address right off the bat defense counsel's repeated argument, which I think is misses the point. He keeps saying that this case is unique and this case is properly teed up for an ineffective assistance of counsel claim because we do have statements from defense counsel about why he did or did not do certain things. That's correct. We do have that, and that is a bit unusual in this case. But defense counsel is wrong in saying that the reason that defense counsel offered for not pursuing an entrapment defense was based on a misunderstanding of entrapment law. One, I don't think defense counsel misunderstood entrapment law. There was no evidence in this case, and I don't think he could have adduced any evidence that there was a huge disparity between the value of the crack cocaine and the payment that the defendant received from the confidential informant during the controlled buys that happened that, as we've already discussed, were not at issue in the trial here because they were dismissed. But more importantly, defense counsel in this case told the court, and this is in the record, and this is what appellate counsel overlooks, he gave the court his strategic reason for not pursuing an entrapment defense. That is recited on page 9 of my brief. I have an excerpt there and explained in footnote 5 that what defense counsel is saying to the court is, I didn't pursue the entrapment defense because late in the game, the government dismissed these counts of the control buys. They dismissed five of these counts, and we had a problem of, quote, opening the door. That was his strategic reason. He didn't want to pursue an entrapment defense because in order to do that, as you indicated, Judge Posner, defense counsel would have had to bring up these control buys that the jury otherwise wasn't going to hear anything about. And that would have been very damaging to the defendant. Those controlled buys would have allowed the government to more easily prove that the defendant intended to distribute the crack cocaine that was found in his pocket and that was found in his house. Instead, defense counsel made the strategic decision not to pursue an entrapment defense, possibly a completely unmeritorious defense in the first place, but he did not want to open the door. That strategic reason is fatal to the Strickland claim here, along with the fact.
So that evidence of those five buys doesn't come in until sentencing?
That's absolutely correct, Your Honor. And the reason that I dismissed those control buys, those counts regarding those control buys, is I did not want to have to bring the confidential informant into court and have he or she subjected to public scrutiny, have his or her name in the record, et cetera, and have to deal with the panoply of websites and other sort of methods out there that try to out confidential informants. There was no need for that in this case. I knew the evidence would come in at sentencing as relevant conduct, so we just went to trial on two counts of possession with intent to distribute. There could not have been a successful entrapment defense for a variety of reasons, including the fact that the jury never heard any evidence in those controlled buys. And I will say, Your Honor, this is, Judge Posner, another crack cocaine case. There was a gun here found in the house during the search. But if we had simply pursued the case before to the point of doing the search warrant and had not done the search warrant, we would not have found a gun. There was no evidence that the defendant was carrying a gun during any of his deals. And I would refer to the court to United States v. Edwards, in case you're curious, Your Honor, a case that from our court and that this court has had occasion to consider, and that is a crack distribution case that did not involve a gun. There was no gun in that case. And as a prosecutor who has been working in the Northern District of Indiana, where we have the GRIT Task Force and a high amount of crack cocaine cases, I've been doing that for almost 5 years. I would say it's about a third of the cases, for your information, Your Honor, in which there is no gun found. There are plenty of crack dealers who simply go, do the deal, don't have a gun. And in fact, there are some, Your Honor, who have told us later on they know that if they show up with that gun, they're going to get a bigger hit, just like some crack dealers are now being careful not to distribute more than 5 grams at a time, especially those who've been around the block and have a prior qualifying conviction, because they know that's a 10-year hit as opposed to maybe a 24 or 25-month guideline sentence. So
That's fascinating.
I appreciate the court indulging me. I realize that's the previous case. The government obviously asks that the court affirm the district court ruling.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ratcliffe. So, Mr. Caligal, your time ran out, but if you'd like a minute, you can have it. No? Okay. Well, thank you.